Chapter 7. Joktha. Every woman knows there are only two kinds of men, those who feel and those who pretend. Always remember, my dear, though only the former can be loved, only the latter can be trusted. It is passion that blackens eyes, not calculation. Anonymous letter. It is far better to outwit truth than to apprehend it. Anani Proverb. Early Spring, 4112, Year of the Tusk, Joktha. They ate in the privy dining chambers of the dead grandee who had once ruled the Donjon Palace. The room possessed all the features Nayor had come to associate with Kianin as opposed to merely Phanum decor. The threshold had been carved in the imitation of elaborately thatched mats. The single window opposite the entrance was shuttered with iron fretwork, which no doubt had once carried the same blooming vines he saw on similar windows throughout the city. And the walls were frescoed with geometric designs rather than images, stylized or otherwise. The center of the room dropped three steps so that the table, which stood no higher than Nayur's knee, appeared to have been hewn from the floor. It was carved of mahogany, and so polished that, given the proper angle, it possessed a mirror sheen. With a battery of candles as their only source of illumination, it seemed they sat in a sunken nest of pillows, surrounded by a shadowy gallery. All of them were at pains not to rub knees, the perennial problem of dining at Kianin tables. Nayor occupied the head. Confis sat to his immediate right, followed by General Sompas of the Kidrahil, then General Ariamantaris of the Nazareth Column, General Baxatis of the Celial Column, and lastly General Imyonix of the Sepaloran Auxiliaries. To Nayor's immediate left sat Baron Sanumnus, followed by Baron Ternimus, then Troyati, the captain of the Hemskilvara. The slaves hovered in the surrounding gloom, refilling wine bowls or removing spent plates. Two Kenryan knights in full battle dress watched from the entrance, their silver war masks drawn down.
"Sompas says lights were sighted on your private terrace," Confis remarked. His tone was offhand, in the probing way of devious family members. "What was it?" he asked, glancing at the man. "Some 4 or 5 days ago?"
"The night of the rain," the general said, barely looked up from his plate. He obviously harbored reservations regarding either his exalt general's feckless manner or the whole notion of dining with their Skilvendi captor. Probably both, Nayor mused, and much more besides. Confis stared in open expectancy of some kind of reply. Nayor matched his gaze, sheared the meat from a drumstick with exposed teeth, then returned his attention to his plate. He had suffered an unaccountable hankering for fowl of late. He slurped back more unwatered wine, glimpsing the exalt general as he did so. There were still signs of bruising about his left eye. Like his generals, he wore ceremonial military dress, a tunic of black silk chased in silver embroidery under a cuirass stamped with stylized falcons about a colorless imperial sun. That the man had managed to have his wardrobe dragged across the desert, Nayor mused, spoke volumes. Every time he closed his eyes, he saw blood arcing across the walls. Nayor had ostensibly summoned Confis and his generals here to discuss the arrival of the transports and the subsequent embarkation of his columns. Twice now he had quizzed the man on the matter, only to realize afterward that the answers the fiend provided only made apparent sense. But in truth, he cared nothing for the transports.
"Unnatural lights," Confis continued, still staring at Nayor in expectation of an answer.
Of course, Nayor's earlier refusal to reply, as obvious as it was, had accomplished nothing. Men such as Ikuri Confis, the Utamut chieftain understood, did not embarrass. Fear, however, was a far different matter. He took another deep drink, watched Confis's canny eyes following his wine bowl. There was cleverness to his look, an appraisal of potential weakness. But there was worry also. The matter with the sorcerer had spooked him, as Nayor had known it would. Was this, he wondered, how the Dunyane felt?
"I wish," Nayor said, to speak of cayuth.
Confess pretended to occupy himself with his meal. He ate in the effete twin-fork manner of the Nansor caste nobility, drawing each piece of food as though searching for pins. Given the circumstances, perhaps he did search for pins. His eyes were hooded when he looked up, but the taint of elation was unmistakable. In fact, there had been something exultant about his manner since his arrival.
He planned something. He thinks me already doomed.
The exalt general shrugged. What about Cayuth?
I'm curious. What would you have done if Zunaret had not attacked you?
Confess smiled in the manner of men who saw entire conversations from beginning to end.
Zunaret had no choice, he said. That was the genius of my plan.
I don't understand,
Ternema said, spilling duck from the corners of his mouth as he did so.
The exalt general had taken every factor into account,
Sompas explained with the soldier's first-hand confidence.
The seasons and the demands of their herds, their sense of honor, and the acts that would incite them, and most importantly, their arrogance.
Sompas cast a quick glance at Nayor as he said this, one that somehow managed to seem both vicious and worried. Of all the generals present, Biaxi Sompas puzzled Nayor the most. The Biaxi were the Aikuri's traditional rivals in the congregate, yet the man could scarce speak without licking Confess's balls.
The Skilvendi think buggery, tebu,
General Imyonix exclaimed in his thick accent.
The greatest of obscenities.
He had lifted his eyes ceilingward while saying greatest. Now he fixed Nayor with a gloating look.
So the exalt general had all our captives raped in open view.
Sompas blanched, while Baxatis scowled at the pugnacious Norserai fool. Araya Mantaris laughed into his wine bowl, but otherwise didn't dare look down the table. Both Senumnus and Ternemus cast discreet glances at their commander.
Yes,
Confess said blithely as he worked his forks. Tap, tap, scrape, scrape.
So I did.
For a long moment, no one dared utter a word. Devoid of expression, Nayor watched the exalt general chew.
War?
Confess continued, as though it were only natural that men should hang on his enlightened discourse. He paused to swallow.
War is no different than Benjuka. The rules depend on the moves made, no more, no less.
Before he could continue, Nayor said,
War is intellect.
Confess paused, carefully set aside his silver forks. Nayor pushed his own plate aside.
You wonder where I heard that.
The man pursed his lips and shook his head. He dabbed his chin with his nap.
No. You were there that day, when I explained my tactics to Martimus. You were there, weren't you? Among the dead.
I was.
Confess nodded as though an old and arcane suspicion had been confirmed.
I'm curious. It was just Martimus and I that day.
He looked at Nayor significantly.
We had no escort.
You wonder why I did not kill you?
The exalt general smirked. I was going to say try. A slave's youthful hand reached from the darkness, drew Nayor's plate away, gold and bones.
The grasses, he said. They knotted about my limbs. They bound me to the earth.
A door had opened somewhere. He could see it clearly in all their eyes, even in those of his so-called subordinates. A door had opened, and terror had stepped into their midst.
I see you.
Only Confess seemed oblivious. It was as though he lacked the required organs.
But of course, he said, grinning, the field was mine.
No one laughed. Nayor leaned back, stared down into the palms of his great hands.
Leave us, he commanded. Everyone!
At first, no one moved. No one even breathed. Then Confess cleared his throat. With an intrepid scowl, he said,
Do it. Do as he says.
Sompas began to protest.
Now!
The exalt general barked. When they were gone, Nayor's eyes clicked onto the man's chiseled face. His own brow, even his nose, were ghosts on the fringes of his periphery, a reminder of what watched.
Neyur Urskiotha.
Confis nodded as though he entirely understood. I would have lost Kaiuth, he said, had you been king of tribes.
Most violent of all men. That,
Neyur said,
and more.
The man chuckled into his wine bowl. Arching his eyebrows, he said,
The Empire as well, I suppose.
Neyur studied him, suffused with a faint kind of wonder. The voice was the same, yet it seemed impossible that the boy before him could be the Imperial Exalt General who had surveyed Kaiuth that morning so long ago. That man had been all-conquering. He had towered over the pastures, and the innumerable dead had all mouthed his name, the great Ikuri Confis. And now here he was, the Lion of Kaiuth, his neck as slender as any Neyur had broken. The Exalt General pushed back his plate, turned to him in a manner at once jocular and conspiratorial.
What is it that resides in the hearts of hated foes, hm? Save the Anasarimba, there's no man I despise more than you.
He leaned back with a friendly shrug.
And yet I find this unlikely repose in your presence.
Repose, Neyur snorted. That is because the world is your trophy room. Your soul makes flattery of all things, even me. You make mirrors of all that you see.
The Exalt General blinked, then cackled in laughter.
Let's not mince words, Skilvendi.
Neyur hammered his knife into the heavy table. Bowls, platters, and confis all jumped.
This, he grated. This is what the world is, in truth.
Confis swallowed, somehow managed to maintain his facade of good humor.
And what might that be?
The barbarian grinned.
Even now it moves you.
Ikuri Confis licked his lips. Fine features tightened about clenched teeth. Why did anger always look so bland on beautiful faces?
I can assure you, Confis said evenly. I fear no.
Neyur struck, cuffed him so hard he toppled backward.
You act as though you lived this life a second time.
Neyur leapt into a crouch upon the table, sent plates and bowls spinning, eyes as round as silver talons. Confis scrambled backward through the cushions.
As though you were assured of its outcome.
Confis had turned, was fighting his way clear of the depression.
Somp! Somp!
Neyur vaulted across the table, hammered the back of his head. The Exalt General went down. Neyur unfastened his belt, snapped it free. He yanked it about the sobbing man's neck, hoisted him to his knees. He wrenched him back to the table, threw him onto his chest. He smashed his face against its own reflection, once, twice. He looked up, saw the slaves cringing in the shadows, their arms upraised. One of them wept.
I am a demon,
he cried.
A demon!
Then he turned back to Confis, shuddering on the table beneath him. Some things required literal explanation. Sunrise. Light speared through the eastward columns, glazing them orange and rose. A faint breeze carried the scent of cedar and sand. It seemed he could hear all Jaktha stir to the touch of morning. Neyur swatted a wine bowl from the sheets. It clanged across tiles before being silenced by the carpets. He sat at the edge of the bed, pinching the bridge of his nose, then strode to the bronze wash basin set into the west wall. He stared at the geometric frescoes, ovals interlocking, while rinsing away the blood and soil smeared across his thighs. Then he walked naked onto his terrace, into the sunlight. Like a bead of oil dropped in water, Jaktha spread outward as he approached the balustrade, stark and silent in the early morning light. Sand doves squabbled on the eaves. To the east, black against the silver-gold sea, a fleet of ships lay anchored beyond the mouth of the harbor. Nansur ships. So, it would be today. He dressed without his body slaves, though he dispatched one with a summons for Troyati. The captain intercepted him on his way to the barracks mess.
Send men out to those transports, Neyur said. We lower the harbor chain only when each and every one has been searched. Then I want you personally to gather Confis and his generals, bring them to the harbor, the Grand Quay. Take as many men as can be spared.
The taciturn Conryan had listened dutifully, scratching the swazand across his right forearm as he did so. He crushed his beard to his chest with a nod.
And Troyati, no matter what happens, make sure you secure the Ikuri.
Something worries you, the captain said.
For a heartbeat, Nayor found himself wondering whether they were friends, Troyati and himself. Ever since riding with him in Shygek, Troyati and the others had called themselves the Hemskilvara, the Skilvendi's men. He had taught them the ways of the people, they had seemed important then, and with a strange capacity of the young to worship, they had followed and had continued to follow even after Proyas had reassigned them.
This fleet, it has arrived too soon, I think. There is a chance it was dispatched before Confis's expulsion.
Troyati frowned.
Instead of retrieving Confis, you think it brings him reinforcements?
Think of Kayuth. The Emperor only sent a fraction of the Imperial army with Confis. Why? To guard against my kinsmen when they had been ruined? No. He saved his strength for a reason.
The captain nodded, his eyes bright with sudden understanding.
Secure Confis, Troyati. Spill as much blood as you have to.
After sending word to Senumnus and Ternimus, Nayor rode with several of the Hemskilvara to the so-called Grand Quay, which was essentially a stone and gravel berm built out into the water, set about with wooden docks like hoardings upon curtain walls. Discarded oyster shells cracked beneath his sandals as he strode out to its terminus. His men fanned out, press-ganging the Anathi squatters, fishermen mostly, who continually availed themselves of unused berths. Nayor's presence ensured the absence of incident. Drying nets were dragged away, shanties were kicked down. The air smelled of dank and rotting fish. Raising a hand against the sun, he watched a handful of boats row out toward the mouth of the harbor, drawing closer to the foremost Nansor Karak. They looked like overturned beetles, legs pitching water in time. Red-throated gulls drifted through the sky above, their screeches near and jarring. What had Ternimus called them? Yes, Gopas. He watched as more and more boats gained the fleet. Senumnus arrived shortly after in full battle dress, accompanied by a Thunieri chieftain named Skewara, who had disembarked 3 days earlier with some 300-odd kinsmen, men of the Tusk all. A combination of Umarnan wine and diarrhea, Senumnus explained, had delayed their departure. The chieftain was a stout, blonde-braided man possessing the same pocked fierceness that characterized so many of his countrymen. He spoke no Shaiak whatsoever, but between his and Senumnus's smattering of Tidoni, Nayor was able to bargain with him. It seemed Skewara was a pirate of recent conversion, and as such had an abiding hatred of the Nansor and their pious fleets. He agreed to tarry yet one more day. A messenger from Troyati appeared during their exchange. Imyonix, Bexatis, and Araya Mantaris were even now being escorted to the harbor, the man said, but Confis and Sompas were nowhere to be found. Apparently, Confis had been severely beaten the night before, and Sompas had taken him elsewhere in the city, searching for a physician. Nayor matched Senumnus's dark gaze.
Seal the gates, he said. Man the walls. If anything happens, the city is yours, as is the warrior prophet's charge.
The baron flinched from the intensity of his look, then nodded in resignation. Nayor turned back to the sunlight as he and Skewara withdrew. The first of the boats was returning, rowing between the towers of the harbor's mouth, over the chain where it dipped in the water. The sun had climbed high enough for him to discern the crimson of the transport sails bundled against black painted masts. Ternimus and his entourage arrived moments before Troyati's men escorted the Nansor officers onto the berm. The man smelled of wine and fried pork. Nayor told him to muster his men along the docks.
If all is well, he said, you will need to organize the embarkation.
Is all well?
The baron asked with open apprehension. They could all smell it now.
Nayur turned his back on the man, waved for his Hemskilvara to bring the captives to the end of the quay. Their arms were bound behind their backs, which meant they had resisted. He glared at the Nansor generals as they were prodded forward.
You had better pray these transports are empty.
Dog!
Old Baxata spat.
What do you know of prayer?
More than your exiled general.
A moment of silence.
We know what you did,
Erea Mantera said, not without some caution. Scowling, Nayor approached the general, pausing only when he towered over him.
What did I do?
He asked, his voice strange.
There was blood when I awoke. Blood and shit.
Erea Mantera fairly quailed in his shadow. He opened his mouth to answer, then tried to purse away trembling lips.
Fucking swine!
Baxata's cry to Nayor's immediate right.
Skilvendi, pig!
Despite his fury, there was fear in his eyes as well. The Gopas dipped and screamed in the air above.
Where is he?
Nayor asked.
Where is the Ikuri?
None of the three said a word, and only Baxata dared meet his gaze. At one point, he seemed about to spit at him, but apparently thought better of it. Nayor turned back to the nearest boat's approach. He looked down to the black water beyond the dock's edge, watched it slap about the pilings. He saw a branch reaching up from the murk, its forking tip waving just above the surface, like fingers ringed by foam. The boatmen were shouting across the water. The transports were empty. By mid-afternoon, all the Karaks and their escort of war galleys had been piloted into the harbor. Nayor kept the gates sealed, not willing to expose himself in any way until he had Confis in his clutches. He had set Ternemus and his men to join Troyati in ransacking the city. The admiral of the Nansor fleet, a man called Tarempus, explained that the seasonal winds that so determined travel across the three seas had been unexpectedly favorable. He was far more worried about his return trip, or so he claimed. He was one of those restless, small-statured men who, given the way their eyes darted, seemed far more interested in their surroundings than their interlocutors. It was as though he continually sized everything up. Sometime afterward, the columnaries in the main camp began rioting. They had caught word of the fleet's early arrival. When noon came without any official word, they organized a protest. Several times in the course of his travels across the city, Nayor had actually heard their commotion, raucous shouts followed by booming cheers. As much was to be expected from homesick men, he supposed, especially after nearly 3 weeks of internment. Then, word of their exalt general's disappearance leaked out. With Senumnus and Skewara in tow, Nayor climbed the curtain walls overlooking the camp. Gaining the heights was like stepping from a calm grotto into the heart of battle, such was the clamor. A slum of hovels and tents extended from the wall's footings, filling a great swath of earth denuded by the milling of countless feet. The bare earth funneled southward, drawn into a track running across abandoned fields to the Orus River, which wound blue and black behind hazy screens of trees. A vast mob had gathered along the westward regions of the camp, thousands of men in soiled red tunics, shaking fists at a thin line of Kenryan knights arrayed some 100 paces distant on the far side of a raised orchard. With the exception of their helms and masks, they looked for all the world like Kianine horsemen. Senumnus whistled in grim appreciation.
Should we cut them down?
He ventured.
Your men would be swallowed whole. You would simply be arming them.
Leave them, then. Nayor shrugged.
I see no siege towers. Just keep them hemmed in, away from their officers. Give a mob a head, and it becomes an army. If they start forming ranks, if they remember their discipline, summon me immediately.
The Baron nodded in what seemed grudging admiration. Word arrived from Troyati not long afterward. The captain was in the city's crammed necropolis in the largely abandoned Kianine quarter, where his men had apparently found some kind of tunnel. The certainty of it had coalesced long before Nayor found the man standing shirtless, hands on hips, at the mouth of the half-ruined sepulchre. Confis was gone.
It runs several hundred yards beyond the walls, the Khanrayan said in grim explanation. They had to excavate some to breach the surface. Some. He grimaced as though to say, at least he got his hands dirty. Nayor studied the man for a moment, pondered the absurdity of Enrithi scarring themselves in the manner of Skilvendi. It made him seem more a man somehow. He glanced across the necropolis, at the leaning obelisks, sagging ash houses, and leering images, all Nansur or Canaan. He felt none of the dread that had prevented the Fainim from reclaiming this ground. Shouts echoed from the nearby streets, the Hemskilvara calling to one another.
Call off the search, Nayor said.
He nodded to the entrance of the sepulchre.
Collapse it. Close the tunnel.
He turned to search the harbor, but the burnt brick facade of a tenement obscured it. Confis had orchestrated all this. After so long with the Dunyane, he knew the smell of premeditation. This would not be another Kaiuth.
Something, something.
Without a further word to Troyati, he galloped the short distance to the Donjon Palace. He strode through the ornate halls, shouting for the scarlet schoolman, Sornemi. He found the initiate, just as he stumbled from his chambers, eyes swollen from slumber.
What canst do you know?
He barked. The insipid fool blinked in astonishment.
I...
Can you burn wood from a distance? Ships?
Yes.
A lone Khanrayan horn pealed from some hidden distance, the signal Senumnus was to use to summon him. There was some kind of emergency along the walls.
Get to the harbor!
Nayor snarled, already running. As he rounded the marble banister, he caught a final glimpse of Sornemi, standing awkward and dumbstruck, clutching the front of his silk nightshirt. He rode hard to the tooth, where the horn seemed to issue. It rang out three more times, metallic and mournful. He shouldered his way through the knights milling in the open mall about the tooth's inner gates. Shouting men waved to him from the barbican summit.
Quickly!
Baron Sonumnus exclaimed as he crested the final stairs.
Come!
Leaning between the floriated battlements, Nayor saw that the columnaries had abandoned their camp and were making their way north. He saw clots of them scattered across the distance, jumping irrigation ditches, filing through groves.
There,
Sanumnus said, clutching his beard with one hand and pointing to the first broad bend in the River Orus with the other. Peering between black-boughed sand willows, Nayor saw a band of armored horsemen riding in loose formation. They bore a crimson banner with a black sun halved by a horse head. Kidrahil.
And there,
Sanumnus said, this time pointing to the hills past a series of green-mottled slopes. Though they marched in valley gloom, Nayor could see them clearly, ranks of infantrymen.
You've doomed us,
Sanumnus said in his periphery. His tone was strange. There was no accusation in his voice. Something worse. Nayor turned to the man, saw immediately that Sanumnus understood their straits all too well. He knew that the Imperial transports had set ashore in one of the natural harbors to the north of the city, and there disembarked who knew how many thousands, an entire army, no doubt. And he knew, moreover, that Confis could not afford to let even one of them escape alive.
You were supposed to kill him, Sanumnus said. You were supposed to kill Confis.
Weeper, faggot weeper.
Nayor frowned.
I am not an assassin,
he said. Unaccountably, the Baron's eyes softened. Something almost kindred passed between them.
No, the man said. I suppose you're not.
Weeper!
As though prompted by some kind of premonition, Nayor turned and stared down the pool, the broad thoroughfare that opened onto the tooth all the way to the harbor. Over the welter of rooftops, he could see the farthest of the black-clappered transports. The nearer ones were only masts. A flash of light glimpsed through a slot between walls. Nayor blinked. The thunderclap followed moments after. All those lining the parapet turned in astonishment. More lights glimpsed over obscure buildings. Sanumnus cursed in Khanrayan.
Schoolmen.
Confis had hidden schoolmen on his transports. Imperial sake. Nayur's thoughts raced. He turned back to the formations advancing through the valley, glanced at the setting sun. More cracks rumbled across the sky.
Kore Bowman, he said to the Baron. You have what, 4 Kore Bowman?
The Dairemti brothers and 2 besides. But they would be dead men. The Imperial sake, sweet Sejanus!
Nayur grasped both his shoulders.
This treachery, he said. The Aikuri must kill all who might testify against him. You know this?
Sanumnus nodded, expressionless. Nayur released his grip.
Tell your trinket men to situate themselves in the buildings surrounding the harbor, to hide. Tell them they need kill only one of them, to pen the sake in the harbor. With no infantry to prize their way, they'll be loath to advance. Sorcerers are fond of their skins.
The man's eyes brightened in understanding. Nayur knew that Confis had likely commanded the schoolmen in the harbor to remain on their ships, that their primary purpose was to render escape impossible. The exiled general was not so foolish as to risk his most powerful and delicate tools. No, Confis meant to come through the tooth. But there was no harm in letting Sanumnus and his men think they had forced this on him. A brilliant flash deflected their attention to the harbor. No doubt Ternemus and his men, those who yet survived, were fleeing into the city.
It will be dark,
Nayur shouted over the resulting thunder.
It will be dark before the Nansur can organize an assault on the tooth. Aside from spotters, we must abandon the walls. We must withdraw into the city.
Sanumnus frowned.
The sake can do nothing so long as we stand in the midst of their countrymen,
Nayur explained.
That is cause to hope.
Hope?
We must bleed him. We are not the only men of the Tusk.
The Baron suddenly bared clenched teeth, and Nayur saw it, the spark he had needed to strike. He glanced down the length of the parapet at the dozens of anxious faces that stared back at him. Others, mostly Thunieri, watched from the tooth's cobbled mall below. He looked to the harbor, saw curtains of smoke rolling orange and black in the setting sun. He strode to the wall's inner brink, held out his arms in grand address.
Listen to me! I will not lie to you. The Nansor can afford no quarter because they can afford no truth. We all die this night.
He let these words ring into silence.
I know nothing of your afterlife. I know nothing of your gods or their greed for glory. But I do know this. In days to come, widows shall curse me as they weep. Fields shall go to seed. Sons and daughters shall be sold into slavery. Fathers shall die desolate, knowing their line is extinct. This night I shall carve my mark into the Nansurium, and thousands shall cry out for want of my mercy.
And the spark became flame.
Skilvendi!
They roared.
Skilvendi!
The mall behind the tooth had been a market of some kind before the coming of the Holy War. An expanse of some 20 lengths extended from the base of the Barbican to the mouth of the pool. An ancient tenement of Canaan construction fronted the pool's north side, its base riddled with derelict shops and stalls. Nayur had concealed himself opposite, in one of the smaller buildings that ran along the south. If he peered, he could make out the glint of arms belonging to the shadowy myriad crowded within the tenement. A small window in the western wall afforded him a view across the gravel and dust of the mall, but since the moon rose to the west, the inner wall and barbican were little more than monoliths of impenetrable black. Behind him, Troyati whispered to the Hemskilvara, detailing the weaknesses in Nansur armor and tactics that Nayur had described to him, Sanumnus, Ternemus, and Skewada earlier. Outside, the shouts of Nansur officers echoed through the clear night air, Confis making final preparations. As Nayur had expected, the Sake had refused to leave their transports, which meant they owned the harbor and nothing else. While keeping a close eye on the arriving columns, So far, the Ferratus, the Horiel, and the famed Mosas had assembled. Nayor had dispersed teams of men throughout the buildings surrounding the tooth, armed with what sledges and pickaxes they could muster. In a few short hours, they had managed to knock out hundreds of walls, transforming, in effect, a broad tract of the western city into a labyrinth. Then, fumbling their way through the dark, they had taken up positions and waited. This was not, Nayor realized, what the Dunyane would do. Either Kellis would find a way, some elaborate or insidious track, that led to the domination of these circumstances, or he would flee. Was that not what had happened at Karaskand? Had he not walked a path of miracles to prevail? Not only had he united the warring factions within the Holy War, he had given them the means to war without. No such path existed here, at least none that Nayor could fathom. So why not flee? Why cast his lot with doomed men? For honor? There was no such thing. For friendship? He was the enemy of all. Certainly there were truces, the coming together of coincidental interests, but nothing else, nothing meaningful. Kellis had taught him that. He cackled aloud when the revelation struck, and for a moment the world itself wobbled. A sense of power suffused him, so intense it seemed something other might snap from his frame, that throwing out his arms he could shear Jaktha's walls from their foundations, cast them to the horizon. No reason bound him, nothing. No scruple, no instinct, no habit, no calculation, no hate. He stood beyond origin or outcome. He stood nowhere.
The men wonder, Troyati said cautiously, what amuses you, Lord?
Nayor grinned.
That I once cared for my life.
Even as he said this, he heard something, a surreal muttering like the susurrus of insects through the riddled world around them. Words coiled through the sounds, the way flames glowered through smoke, and it bent the soul somehow, simply hearing them, as though meaning had become contortion. Brilliance. A concatenation of fires boiled over the parapets. Suddenly the barbican seemed a shield held against a blinding light. One of the spotters toppled, thrashing flames all the way to the ground. They were coming. Within the barbican, lines of brilliance sketched the seams about the iron-banded doors. A thread of gold flared down their center, and in a blink both were blown outward against the portcullis. Iron screeched, stone cracked, another burst. Like sound from a horn, light blasted from the underpass. The portcullis sailed into the old Canaan tenement. A wave of smoke rolled outward and upward, across buildings and down the pull. Nayor blinked spots from his eyes. Everything had gone dark. His warriors coughed, beat the air with their hands. They fell still when they heard the growing roar. Shouting men. Thousands of them. Nayor motioned for everyone to shrink back into the blackness. It seemed to drone on for an extraordinary length of time, but the roar lost none of its ardor, and ever so gradually it became louder and louder. Columnaries. Spears out, square shields tight, materialized from the black maw of the barbican. They ran screaming, rank after rank of them, setting up shield walls to either flank, hacking at the doors to the barbican and rushing forward down the pull. Nayor knew how they had been trained. Strike hard and deep, cut upon your enemy's flank, sever him from his kinsmen. The wise spear, their officers bawled, finds the back. The heartbeats that followed were absurd. Like gleaming shadows, Nansor after Nansor flashed past the opening of their abandoned stall. Hundreds rushed down the pull, their helms glossed in moonlight, their pale calves dancing in the gloom. Then a horn, the first, sounded in the blackness. Across the way, Nayor saw wild-haired Thunieri dropping from the tenement's second-story windows, hooting their unnerving war cry. The ring of steel, the clap of shields, then all became roaring clamor. Almost as one, the Nansor stopped and turned. Some even jumped to better glimpse the axes pitching to their left. A few canny souls turned apprehensively to black windows and entrances about them. Then the second horn sounded, and Nayor leapt, screaming the war cry of his fathers. They crashed into the backs of the stunned infantrymen. He caught the first man in the jaw as he turned, the second in the armpit as he struggled to free his spear. Within seconds, hundreds had died. Then suddenly the Conryans on the south found themselves facing the Thonieri on the north. A ragged cheer was raised, which Naor silenced with his raving voice.
Off the streets! Off the streets!
The unholy muttering had started anew. The battle that followed was unlike any Naor had experienced. The pitch of night struck in the hues of sorcerous light, catching unawares and being so caught. Hunted and hunting through a labyrinthine slum, then warring in open streets, hilt to hilt, spitting blood from one's teeth. In the dark, his life hung from a thread, and time and again only his strength and fury saved him. But in the light, whether by moon or, more likely, the burning of nearby structures, the Nansor flinched from him and attacked only with the haft of their spears. Confis wanted him. Naor had not the arms for the Swazant he earned that night. The last he saw of Skewada, the chieftain Thane, and a band of his wild-haired axemen had butchered a company of infantrymen and turned to face down a Kidrihil charge. Sanumnus actually died in his arms, coughing blood and spittle in the gloom. Troyati and many of the other Hemskilvara fell in a rain of sorcerous naphtha that left Naor himself untouched. He would never learn what happened to Ternemis or Sarnemi. In the end, he and a handful of strangers, some 3 Conryans, like eerie automatons with their war masks drawn, and 6 Thonieri, one with the shrunken heads of Srank swinging from his flaxen braids, found themselves driven from the flaming wreck of a millery back onto a broad stair beneath the ruins of a Fainum tabernacle. They hacked and hammered at the rush of columnaries until only Naor and the nameless Thonieri stood, chests heaving shoulder to shoulder. The dead formed a skirt of tangled limbs across the steps below them. The dying rocked and kicked like drunks. All the world seemed slicked in blood. Officers bawled through the dark ranks arrayed below them. Framed by the burning millery, the Nansor charged them again. The Norserai laughed and roared, hewing and crushing with great swings of his battle axe. A spear caught him in the neck and he stumbled into the threshing of swords. Naor howled in exultation. They came at him with the butts and hafts of their spears, their faces screwed in terror and determination. Naor leapt into their midst, scarred arms hacking.
"Demon!" he roared. "Demon!"
Hands clutched for his arms and he shattered wrists. Punctured faces. Forms tackled his torso, and he snapped necks, crushed spines. He tossed lifeblood skyward, nailed beating hearts still. All the world had become rotted leather, and he the only iron, the only iron. He was of the people. Without warning, the Nansor relented, crowded back into the shields of those behind, away from the advance of his dripping aspect. They stared in horror and astonishment. All the world seemed to fire.
"For 1,000 years, he grated. Fucking your wives, strangling your children, striking down your fathers."
He brandished his broken sword. Blood spilled in loops from his elbow.
"For 1,000 years, I have stalked you."
He threw aside the blade, kicked a spear into his hand, then cast it at the soldier before him. It punched through his shield, through his banded cuirass, and erupted from the small of his back. Naor laughed. The roaring flames took up his voice, made it sorcerous with dread. Cries and shouts, some even dropped their weapons.
"Take him!"
a voice was shrieking.
"You are Nansor! Nansor!"
A familiar voice. It exerted a collective force, a consciousness of shared blood. Naor lowered his chin, smiled. They came as one this time, an encompassing wave of blows and clutching hands. He hammered and wrenched, but they bore him down. Everything became eye-watering numbness. They seemed howling apes, dancing and punishing, dancing and punishing. Afterward, they cleared a path for their all-conquering Exalt General. Smoke towered into the firmament, beyond the battered beauty of his face, shrouding stars. His eyes were the same, though they appeared unnerved, very unnerved.
No different, his broken lips spat. No different than Zunarit, after all.
And as the darkness came swirling down, Nayor at last understood. The Dunyane had not sent him to be Confis's assassin. He had sent him to be his victim.